Welcome to the MERS Monday podcast. I am John Roering, publisher of MERS. We are joined today by Craig Mauger, Simon Schuster, Lauren Gibbons, and Jacob Kanzler. I was actually gone last week. We got a lot done last week. There's no more roads. No more roads issue. What are we going to do? What are we going to talk about?
You'll find out right now.
All right. Well, Craig, what do you think of the issues are going to be for the remainder of what's left of this session year?
First, let me stipulate, I don't think roads is done. It's going to be talked about at length for the next year. I think leading up until the election, there's going to be a debate to frame this issue. Democrats are going to say that Republicans raised your taxes and didn't fix your roads, and Republicans are going to say Democrats weren't part of a solution that was decades in the making. So I think we'll be talking about roads for many, many, many more months.
Lauren, you think this package was a real solution? I mean, Nolan Finley came out this week with an editorial basically saying you sort of broached the subject, but you could have actually solved the problem and you didn't.
I mean, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, I think those answers would be quite different. Senate and House Democrats largely do not think that this is a solution. And even, you know, there's a continued split among Republicans. I mean, it was pretty difficult to get these votes together on the plan, but they ended up doing it. So, yeah, I think Craig is right. I think that whether or not it's a solution will continue to be debated probably until the dawn of time.
The other issues we have on the horizon, energy, what do you think, guys think the timeline is on that? The governor wants the public schools, Detroit public school issue addressed by the end of the year. Is that possible?
I think it will be extremely challenging to get very hesitant Republican lawmakers on board with handing Detroit public schools a large sum of money by the end of the year. But it will be a big issue. I think it's going to be talked about at length. Lawmakers are already starting to examine this. We've got the energy policy reform going on. That's one that maybe could be done by the end of the year. I think the utilities want it done by the end of the year. We've got presumptive parole kicking around out there. And then who knows what's going to go on with prevailing wage repeal. That was a top priority for both the House Republicans and the Senate Republicans, and still unresolved right now.
Okay.
They always find something. I don't know. They check a big issue off the box. We'll find five more. So.
They seem to do that. They seem to do that. That's good, though. We also have a new candidate in the 1st Congressional District. What does the announcement by Senator Casperson mean to the race? And who do you think is going to pop out yet?
Well, I think that it's been, you know, kind of a open secret that Senator Casperson was going to run. Even before Benishek said he was going to not seek a fourth term, Casperson had already started making plans to run as soon as Benishek was out. He didn't want to challenge Benishek, but it was pretty clear that he still wanted to make that second attempt to run for the first district seat. So it's kind of been out there for a while. You know, there's been a few other names. I think it will still be a pretty challenging Republican primary for Casperson. Representative Battaglia, Allen is also a name being floated around. Those names are still out there, and no official announcements yet. But it's looking to be a pretty challenging primary coming up here.
Now, you guys didn't want me to do this, but I feel like I have to do this. I have to say goodbye to Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat. They've been on every podcast probably since, what, last June or earlier when this scandal started to break. Did the results surprise you, Craig? You followed them closely. Did it wind up where you thought it would wind up?
I don't want to brag on this, but yes.
I'm going to.
I think the predictions that I made on Tuesday, I talked to a few people, and I think I said Corser would get about fifth or sixth, and Cindy would get third, close with Bill Sage. That's kind of what happened, and I'm bragging on it because I get a lot of things wrong, but I predicted this one correctly, so I'm smiling right now about it. But I don't think we're saying goodbye to them. These two always find a way to get their names out there. We've got a court case that's going on in Ingham Circuit Court with their staffers suing them. We've got this unknown blackmailer who's still on the lam out there that the former Rep Corser's trying to chase down, and I'm sure there's going to be more stories.
So they're going to continue to reach out from the political dustbin and grab our attention? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, these videos that Rep Corser's been recording from his car have been hits with the public, so I can only expect that more of them are going to be put out. I think we're on part six now, so right. Who knows where this is going to go.
All right. We have, as our guest today for the podcast, Kyle, before he went on vacation, did an interview with Patrick Anderson about legalizing marijuana. On Thursday, MERS is going to be co-hosting, along with the Michigan Chamber Foundation and the Citizens Research Council, about an hour and a half program on legalization, the two possibly two legalization proposals, a look at some other issues, some polling issues, and how other states have fared with this subject. So with that, we'll turn it over to Kyle and Patrick Anderson.
Well, joining me on the other end of the line this week is Patrick Anderson. He's from the Anderson Economic Group, and he just his group just finished a study on marijuana. Thanks for joining us today.
What we've decided to do with cannabis products here is, for the first time that we're aware of, is take a sober, consumer demand-based look at what would consumers actually pay and how many of them would buy cannabis products across the 50 states, recognizing, as we do in all our other work, that each state is different, that Michigan is certainly different from Iowa, New Hampshire, as well as Alaska and California, and even Ohio. So that's what we've done, and it's taken us six solid months of work of a team of people that have looked at all these states, and we're real excited to be releasing it this week.
So tell us how this came about. How did you get inspired to do this study?
I can tell you, and just to assuage the concern of many people that know me, that I'm not living some secret life, this is not because of my personal desire to, go out and smoke ganja. I'm looking at what's happening in the country. I am seeing that the public has recognized some things that a lot of free market economists have pointed out for some time, which is that the general approach of simply criminalizing marijuana, particularly criminalizing it as a Schedule I substance in the federal laws, is not working as either a control on the amount of use or in terms of limiting the amount of crime. In fact, a lot of economists look at the war on drugs in the United States as something that has fueled the corruption and even the destruction of entire states, and they point to terrible examples in Colombia and Mexico at various times where demand for products that are going to be sold in the United States illegally has contributed to just utter destruction of many institutions and the loss of so many lives. That and the fact that Americans just seem to be adjusting their opinions about these things has led us to think, let's take a sober look at this. The sober look means that you look at a state like Michigan and you come to the conclusion that we have, that Michigan's not in a hurry to run out there and legalize marijuana. You look at a state like Ohio. Our pre-publication versions of our report, I'm pleased to tell you, predicted that Ohio voters would not in 2015 legalize marijuana.
Is it because of the monopoly that they were trying to put into that, where only 10 people were going to be in charge of the supply?
I think the version that they used there in Ohio is a big part of the reason that Ohio voters rejected that proposal. And I'll say that the opponents were very, very skilled and careful to identify something that mattered to people, even if they were indifferent to marijuana. And I'd have to say that, in spirit at least, this is something that matches what we have in our Michigan Constitution, where we have said, for example, for a long time, that we don't want the state involved in investing in businesses that might have monopoly situations, going all the way back to our failed experiment with building a canal, which was the high-tech industry of the day. And Ohio voters, I think, were very concerned about that, and I think Michigan voters would be concerned about it, too.
So
the fact that so much of it was fought on the economic front also supports the general view that we're taking here. Americans are ambivalent about the use of marijuana, as to some degree they are about the use of other substances, such as prescription drugs, alcohol, things like that. But they acknowledge that some people want to use it, and that it's been used without rampant crime for a long time by a lot of folks. And in some manner, they're tolerating the use of it and are willing to consider expanding that as long as it's carefully done. I think if the Ohio supporters of that had run a different proposal, for example, just to authorize medical marijuana, there might have been a victory at the polls in Ohio this November. Instead, they went for kind of the whole shebang, and they did it in a manner that raised a legitimate economic question about whether we should be authorizing some, as they say, a monopoly, really an oligopoly position where you've got state-certified or state-protected position for a lot of sellers. Americans don't like that for good reason. It is true that some of it goes on, for example, in gambling, but they certainly didn't want to start this industry off in that respect.
And Ohio would have been the first state to go directly from having no legalization of marijuana straight to legalization without that step of medical marijuana in between. So they would have been unique on that front. But Patrick Anderson, can you tell us a little bit about what your study found?
Yeah, if you look at our report, and our report will be out on the Anderson Economic Group website, an executive summary of the report, which gives a lot of information about 50 states combined, will be freely available. So you can go to the Anderson Economic Group website, look at publications, and look at our cannabis market report, and check out the executive summary, which has got a lot of information in it. Compares all 50 states on a 5-leaf rating, so you can see from 0 leaves to 5 leaves, what's the market demand in each state, gives you an idea of what the current laws are, and provides for each state a political momentum indication about what we think is likely to happen between now and 2017. So, for example, in Ohio, even though it was on the ballot, our political momentum for Ohio was suggested that by 2017, we're thinking the most likely outcome is that Ohio adopts only some kind of medical marijuana allowance. We did not think they were going to go all the way to recreational personal use. And we have similar things for places like Michigan and all 50 states. And each one of these states, our evaluation is based on state-specific indicators. That state's population, that state's laws, that state's consumption of alcoholic beverages, that state's other factors, number of households. That's what makes this so unique, is state by state, serious looking at the market and trying to decide, try to estimate what those people in that state, with their own local concerns, are likely to do between now and 2017. And if there was an industry that developed, what would be its size?
And so did you guys go into the amount of detail as to, like, how much somebody would be willing to pay for, I don't know, a joint or some marijuana oil or something of that nature?
I'd have to tell you that my own personal knowledge that you get to that level is going to get quite a bit frayed. I don't know as much about that. What we do have is gross numbers for the market demand in Michigan, and I'm pleased to tell the Breathless MERS subscribers here, Michigan is a 4.5-leaf state. So we are one of the top 10 states in potential market size, as is Ohio. Ohio is as well. So there's big money that could be made if it was legalized. It's a significant amount of a market, and you'll see in the executive summary of our report, 4.5-leaf state, translates into at least $500 million market for legal marijuana if it was legalized in the state of Michigan.
Now, Patrick, I know that you're familiar that there are a couple initiatives out there to legalize marijuana. What do you think a ballot proposal has to have in order for voters to give its okay?
One of the things that we hope we're achieving here is giving voters an idea that's sober about, say, the tax revenue that they're likely to get. How much demand is there likely to be here? If you look at our report, you'll see we are not forecasting that the average American starts, you know, smoking weed. In fact, we're saying explicitly in here that most people, even if it's legalized, are not going to be partakers in any significant quantity of cannabis products. That's how it is with a lot of consumer products. I mean, there are a lot of brands of cars out there that I see on the road, and I don't buy all of them. There are a lot of kind of houses out there. I don't buy all of them. A lot of lot of kinds of alcoholic beverage. There are a lot of cables, TV, things I don't buy. And I'm like most American consumers. So the sober-minded look here, I think, will give voters a realistic opportunity to evaluate things. And we're hoping that this, on a policy perspective, will reduce the amount of exaggeration that occurs. There are claims out there, for example, that, you know, we can fix the roads, for example, if we'd had enough taxed marijuana. And we could do all this other things. We don't think that's obviously true, but there is tax revenue associated with it. And so if you look at this particular report, as we hope a lot of people will that are interested in this, you'll get a sober-minded idea of what would likely happen in a state like Michigan if, in fact, it was legalized.
Well, very good. We got to let you go here now, but appreciate you being on the podcast today. Patrick Anderson from the Anderson Economic Group.
Well, that concludes our podcast for this Monday. We've got some new stuff on the webpage, though, guys. Our intern, Simon, took some awesome new pictures. We have actually, I think mine was like 10 years old or more. A couple of other ones were even older. We had Kyle in black and white with a tuxedo on.
I thought I took your picture last year when you took my picture.
We did, but then we didn't ever use it because I showed my wife and she said that I looked like I was sleeping or something. Or asleep.
Okay.
So we have basically new biography shots on our staff page. These are live.
These are color shots.
So you can go on the site now.
You can go and look at them right now. Simon did a great job.
It was very professional. The lighting was used. This wasn't just an iPhone.
That's right.
Wherever you want. So
that's right.
These are essentially art pieces that you could print off of a merch staff.
take them with you.
Unlimited edition run of 8x10 glossies.
As long as you give credit to Simon Schuster.
That's right. All right. Well, we want to thank the Press Association for sponsoring this and every other podcast. And we'll be back with you next week.